No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. It's episode 165, and it is basically our season preview show. I'm Jess Root, your host from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals. With me is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's NFL site for the Arizona Cardinals, and also the host of the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. Seth, how is everything going? We are officially ready for football.
Yeah, we're here. We're ready to go, and it's going to be exciting, man. Like, I'm looking forward to the regular season. I'm looking forward to actually games that matter. I know they game planned a little bit for that Atlanta game, and so, you know, that's going to be exciting. But it's going to be fun to see kind of what this team is this year and who they are as a organization and where they are, because they're in kind of a weird limbo, it seems like. And we'll talk about this in a little bit, but, you know, they're in a weird limbo between having the oldest roster in the NFL, but they're definitely making some maneuvers with an eye towards the future.
Yes, and in this episode, what we're going to talk about, we're going to kind of jump right in. Final cuts were over the weekend. The Arizona Cardinals now have their 53-man roster set. It didn't come without some surprises, and we'll go into that. They've made a couple of transactions since then, adding a couple of veterans, one that was kind of expected, another one that was kind of out of left field, it felt like. And then we're going to go into our season preview, talking about the schedule that they have and what are the kind of the expectations we have heading into the season. Who are the players that need to step up? What are the biggest questions? And we'll kind of go through the schedule and kind of predict what we see going on there. And then finally, we will look ahead to the Detroit Lions here in week one as the Cardinals will open on the road in an early East Coast game. Talk about some matchups that there will be and the importance of that the Cardinals will have in winning this game. So let's go ahead and get started. We'll talk about, first and foremost, the 53-man roster, Seth. We waited because the Cardinals like to be one of the last teams to release to announce their cuts. For you, what was the initial takeaway? What were the initial takeaways that you had from the final roster announcement?
I think the first thing was that this roster wasn't very hard to predict overall when you just kind of look at it. You know, you and I whiffed on Chris Johnson. I think we both missed on them keeping only three or keeping four inside linebackers and then moving Philip Wheeler outside. But overall, I mean, this was a pretty easy call to make. There were just some toss-ups and you know, the Rudy Ford, Harlan Miller toss-up. They went with the athleticism upside over the what you know you have in Harlan Miller, which, I mean, let's be honest, it's not a game changer by any means. It's just a nice role player. And clearly the NFL wasn't really interested in Harlan Miller because he wasn't claimed by anybody. In fact, none of the cuts were claimed. So, you know, did the Cardinals make any mistakes? Obviously not, because nobody in the NFL was like, hey, we got to have this guy. I think when it came down to it, it was pretty run-of-the-mill outside of the offensive line, which, I mean, I know is going to be kind of one of our bigger topics today, because it wasn't so much one or the other. It's two of the guys getting waived and then, you know, and who they kept instead.
Yeah, and for me, I wrote about it. I wrote about the surprises on from Final Cuts, and I wrote about five surprises, and the truth is, you know, Scooby Wright not making the team when the report came out he was going to be released. That was a little shocking and not completely unheard of. But for me, of the surprise cuts, only one came out of left field. Chris Johnson, I get. I was surprised, but I get. It tells me with the release of Chris Johnson, it tells me one thing first and foremost, just how much they believe in Kerwin Williams as their backup running back. So it wasn't, for me, it's not as much about Chris Johnson or even Andre Ellington as it was about Kerwin. They see Kerwin ready to take the next step to be that backup running back and return specialist, as they were really careful with him in the preseason. And then behind him, it became a decision between Chris Johnson and Andre Ellington. Ellington looked pretty good in the preseason, and he offers a little bit more versatility with the game-changing plays. He can do the receiver thing. Basically, he is a poor man's David Johnson. And remember, when David Johnson kind of emerged, we both called him sort of a better version, a bigger, stronger, healthier version of Andre Ellington. And so Andre Ellington is just kind of shied into what could be a poor man's David Johnson on a lesser role. Elijah Penny, the special teams issue came into play there. He's basically Stephon Taylor, nothing special there. So the Chris Johnson thing wasn't a big surprise to me. I mean, it was a surprise, but I get it. Scooby Wright, surprise, but I get it. You get the same sort of special teams play from both Philip Wheeler and Josh Bynes. Philip Wheeler's he's pretty good on special teams. And so it wasn't a shock, and there's more upside actually on the field, because Scooby proved to be, you know, at best, a very, very back of the roster guy who can play on special teams. Then you go to Dorian Johnson. Dorian Johnson, their fourth round pick. I started talking about it, about 3 weeks ago. It's time to worry about where his spot on the roster is. And I convinced myself into believing, okay, I guess they will keep him. You knew that the Cardinals like him, but he was just bad. So it was more of a surprise because he was a fourth round pick than it was because of the way he played. But for me, really the big surprise cut was Cole Toner. And we've since learned that it was because, in terms of backup center, they wanted a bigger, stronger guy to be their true backup center, and Cole Toner wasn't that. Toner had, grew, and they praised for the work that he did in the weight room in the offseason, how much he'd grown, and the progress he's made. He was running the first team offense in OTAs and minicamp when AQ Shipley was out. And he was, second team line, playing guard, playing center all through the preseason. Both he and Tony Bergstrom, they cut Toner, they traded Bergstrom, and the guy they kept was Daniel Munier, which is what? He was completely under everybody's radar, obviously outside of the coaches, a guy that was the 13th center the entire time, and he's the guy that makes the roster. To me, that was the surprise. Like, Daniel Munier made the roster, Cole Toner was cut. And the other guys, sure. But those were the big things for me.
Yeah, and Munier was interesting because, he's one of those guys that's just been available for a while. And so to see this be the year, this be the season that they, that they felt like they needed to grab him or keep him around, I guess. So it was probably the better. I'm not sure, to be completely honest, was practice squad eligible still. I'm looking right now, because he's older at 25. But, you just look at it, and like I said, the weirdest thing to me was cutting both Dorian Johnson, or waiving both Dorian Johnson and Cole Toner. Because when you look at it, now I know they brought Dorian back to the practice squad, but when you look at it, that's failing on a fourth and a fifth round draft pick in successive years. I mean, there's nothing good about that. And so, what do you make of it? I do have a slight wondering if Steve Kine is struggling to see a transition from the college game to the pro game with offensive line. And it's something that we've heard and seen before in a lot of scouting. You know, guys that play a position aren't the best at scouting it because they look for things maybe that, you know, if they failed that they couldn't do. And then if they were successful, they look for guys that are similar to them and what they do. And sometimes it's hard to find that. I'm not saying it's one way or the other with Steve Keim, but his track record has not been great thus far through the draft with offensive line. Watford was, you know, just a guy.
Cooper was a big miss.
Yeah, Cooper was a miss. He's on. I mean, and that's the thing is, you know, if you go with the idea that Cooper is, you know, just needed a change of scenery or whatever, well, he's on his fourth team now. He's still fighting for a starting job. Like I'm pretty sure he got the starting job with the Cowboys, but it's not locked up by any means. You know, it's not for sure. And when you look at it overall, it could just be one of those things where, you know, he does better bringing in guys off the scrap heap as opposed to investing draft picks in them. And, you know, you've seen that Daniel Munier or whatever, however you pronounce it, is, it's just the latest. Obviously John Wetzel is a big hit. Ulrich John making the roster, is a big hit. When you look at these guys across, you know, kind of the way, it all makes sense because they're all successes in the fact that they are undrafted free agents that have made the roster and, let's be honest, have outplayed draft picks pretty handily at this point. I mean, Wetzel has completely outplayed Toner. We know that. Ulrich John outplayed pretty much everybody in the preseason. He was one of the better offensive linemen they had. And then obviously Munier outplayed Cole Toner. So you keep these guys that are winning the job. Will Holden still being on the roster was a bit of a surprise. I don't know how you feel about that. Obviously he had a good enough year, but with the addition of Alex Boone, I mean, is he really needed? I mean, it just seems like, and I text you this on Saturday while we were waiting and we were talking about it and you were saying there's no way they're going to keep 7 wide receivers. And I said, no, but they might end up keeping 10 offensive linemen. And they only kept 9 until the day after or 2 days after. And now they have 10. And it's kind of like, you know, and you had a nice theory on this. Why don't you share that?
And that's essentially this. Now, we know about the Will Holden and about the athletic profile that he matches a select few. Essentially, what they ended up doing is stashing two players. They're stashing Will Holden, like they did Olsen Pierre, thinking that it was more likely for him to get picked up off waivers than say Dorian Johnson. Now, we talked about Dorian Johnson before as a guy that, you know, and they've ended up coming. No one's going to, I mean, he was already off a lot of people's boards and it's led again for some speculation that there's some issue with his health and that it doesn't seem that way, but it looks like they're stashing both Munier and Holdert, except for the fact that when I saw the depth chart, that Munier really is their backup center. I don't know if this, I'm not completely sold on this. And I think it tells me a little bit about Evan Bame. If Shipley has to miss, do they move Bame over and to play center and then have Alex Boone? And then we're making reference to a move the Cardinals made just today on Tuesday, is that they signed Alex Boone. They had a free roster spot after they put TJ Logan on IR, and they signed Alex Boone, a veteran guy, has played a lot of years, mostly known for his time with the San Francisco 49ers. Signed a 4-year, nearly $27 million deal last offseason, 2 off-seasons ago with the Vikings, played 1 year, and in his second year, they axe him. He doesn't make the cut. And that's even still with the Vikings owing him a guaranteed $3.4 million, and he signs with the Cardinals. So initially I thought, well, they're stashing Munyer and they're stashing Holden. I still think that the Holden thing is that's what they're doing, kind of treating like Olsen Pierre. They probably had the feeling that he wouldn't get past waivers. For the Munyer part, the fact that he's showing up as backup center tells me, well, maybe that's the case and maybe it's not. That he's a more of an upside pick because they like his size, they like his movement skills, and they like his strength. But it'd be interesting to see if Shipley ever have to miss any time, if they would move Bame over to center and then put Boone there at right guard where he's played most of his career, or if they'd stick Munyer in and keep Bame there at right guard, considering the fact that they've been really, really cognizant not to move him over to center.
Yeah, and so that's definitely one of those, you know, like you said, interesting. And it's going to be something to follow and watch the development of, because it's not anything we know right now, and it's not something that we have seen from this team yet. They kept 9 offensive linemen, I believe, last year. I think the year before it was 8. Last year, though, they kept 9 defensive linemen on a 3-man front defense. So this is – and Olsen Pierre didn't play a snap the entire year. I don't even think
he was active all year.
Yeah,
he
was active
every single game.
Yeah, so he was on the 53-man roster and literally never played. So this is something we've seen. You could be right. It could be, you know, that Will Holden will be inactive for every single game, but they just didn't want him to have a chance to get through waivers. Whereas Dorian Johnson, all right, if somebody picks him up, that's fine, but based on what he did during the season or the preseason, or the lack of anything he did during the preseason, you know, it was unlikely. So, and then just to follow up, I was wrong. Jonathan Cooper is the backup, both guard spots for the Dallas Cowboys. So fourth team, backup guard again. So even going to the great Dallas Cowboys offensive line did not cure Jonathan Cooper, whatever ailed Jonathan Cooper at this point. So
interesting.
You know, so you just look at it and yeah, I think you're kind of right on. And the thing that makes it the most interesting was, and something I think people forget from last year, Zach Dysart was on the practice squad with Andy Murray to start the season. Andy Murray is the tennis player.
The tennis player, yes.
Yeah, with Aaron Murray to start the season. They then cut Murray or release Murray, whatever you do from the practice squad, and Dysart stayed on. But having 9 defensive linemen wasn't an issue because you only kept 2 quarterbacks. They only activated Dysart to the active roster, or brought up Dysart to the active roster for that Thursday night San Francisco game. And then they brought him back up when it was worried that the Miami Dolphins were going to poach him off the roster. So it was never really hard for the Cardinals to stack a single position. This year, they've got 3 quarterbacks on the roster already. You know, they kept 6 wide receivers. Like, so just in quarterbacks and wide receivers and offensive linemen, they have 19 active players on the 53-man roster. Like, that's a massive number when you consider most years they were having 15. So they have, you know, 4 extra players on the active roster. Now, I know that they only kept 4 running backs and 3 tight ends, so that's where the difference is made up. But they, you know, they are slightly unbalanced with only with 26 offensive players to only 24 defensive players, and then clearly the 3 special teams. Which, I mean, can we be honest? I think we saw this team do a complete 180 in the fact that they brought in Phil Dawson and Andy Lee, and you know, they haven't released what they're paying Andy Lee, but. They did not cheap out like they did last year on the special teams. And I know, you know, Justice Mosqueda from Setting the Edge just wrote a big article on kickers and that they're kind of a dime a dozen and whatnot. But clearly he didn't watch the Cardinals last year. So, you know, sometimes paying for that investment, you know, going that extra bit and spending the extra money is worth it. And I think the Cardinals are kind of seeing that based on what happened to them last year.
And Seth's referring to the signing over the weekend of, actually it was announced on Monday, where after the Carolina Panthers cut Andy Lee, the former longtime punter for the San Francisco 49ers, one of the best in the business for a while, he signed with the Cardinals, not to just a one-year deal. This wasn't a regular time signing, but the two-year deal. Matt Weil, who appeared to have won that punting job, was kicked to the curb, and he gets sent on his way. The Andy Lee signing, you know, as exciting as it can be about getting a punter, for me is really exciting because you do see how the Cardinals tried to go on the cheap. They went, you know, with Chandler Catanzaro. He was a promising young kid. But then the bright lights, whatever happened last year, kind of broke him. They went with they had a competition between two undrafted long snappers. That didn't work out for them. They had the young, pretty young Drew Butler. That didn't work out for them. They brought in Matt Weil. They had Ryan Quigley. They even kept Drew Butler long enough to cut one of their draft picks who got picked up by the Rams. And then they go, they bring in Aaron Brewer. I mean, he's you know, he's fine as a long snapper. But then they go out and pay $6 million to Phil Dawson. They realize, oh, the kicking game's kind of important. So,
and I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if it's close to another $5-6 million for Andy Lee.
I mean, maybe a deal.
maybe it's $4 million. I mean, maybe they get him a little cheaper and it's $4 million. But you know, it wouldn't surprise me if they're at $10 million a year, or $10 million in contracts on specials after being, you know, just over $1 million in specials the year before.
Right. And I like it. He's a perfect fit. I do have mild concern. After all, he did lose a punting competition with Michael Pilardi in Carolina. And the only thing that really concerns me is this. We saw what happened to Dave Zastedil. Dave Zastedil had his season end with a hamstring injury, and it sort of lingered. And then the next year he came back, and to be quite honest, to be very fair about this, Drew Butler beat him out. That Zastedil wasn't the same. Now,
yeah, he had nothing left in that leg.
And
he was shot.
And so Andy Lee, you know, 35 years old, coming off a hamstring injury, that's not good for punters. And he loses a punting competition, though according to what we've seen, what they're saying is that he kicked the ball real well in the preseason. So that's my only concern in terms of that, is that it is – is he going to kind of fall off the cliff? But at the same time, based on the production they got last year, I mean, a bad Andy Lee is probably still better than a good Drew Butler.
Oh, definitely it is. And it's unfortunate, but it really is.
Anything else about the rosters, though? Oh, there's one other thing I wanted to bring up that we talked about just before the air. The Cardinals still did a couple of things to stashing players for the future. They ended up keeping Carlton Agudosi, well, on the practice squad. They re-signed him. Krishan Hogan leaves, signs with the Indianapolis Colts practice squad. Carlton Agudosi, and from what I heard, it was fairly close to him making the roster, which would have been a seventh receiver. But they've got a guy, so they've got him stashed. They like what he has. You know, 6'6", got 4.5, 40 speed. But I actually found that out, that, you know, when I first saw him, what was published about him online was that he had ran a 4.7. He's at a 40-inch vertical. He's got really great athletic tests, except for his 40-inch. It was listed at 4.7. I was told that was flat out wrong. It was about a 4.5. 4.5 speed from his guy who's 6'6". That's great. And then you get on top of that, Aaron Dobson. He wasn't cut. He was put on injury reserve. Now, I don't know what his injury was, but I found it honestly a little bit fishy. but a little bit smart too. If the Cardinals are looking ahead to the 2018 season, the receiver position is a big question mark. Larry Fitzgerald's a free agent. John Brown's a free agent. John Brown's a free agent. Then you're left with J.J. Nelson. And so now you've got Carlton Agudosie on the practice squad. They were really intrigued. Bruce Arians was really intrigued with Aaron Dobson, and he just didn't play enough because of the quad injury, the hamstring injury that he had. And so they put him on injured reserve, and because of his injuries, like last year, I mean, he played the 2 years. Last year he was on the Lions roster briefly, like a couple of days. So he never played any games. He was never actually on the active roster at any point. So he never earned an accrued season. This year would have been his year three, but now he's on season-ending injured reserve before the season start, which means he still doesn't gain an accrued season, which means the Cardinals will retain him. Assuming he doesn't get released on an injury settlement at some point, it means that he will be an exclusive rights free agent at the season, and the Cardinals will get another look at him. And they were very impressed with the workout that he had. I think they see a lot of potential in him to be able to develop, but it gives them an option for the future. So there was a couple things, you know, you're like, oh, they're stashing away Will Holden. They're stashing away, you know, in the practice with Carlton Agudosie. They're stashing away Aaron Dobson, kind of what they did with Eli Buka a year ago. And things kind of play out. And after that, I mean, nothing else is all that surprising other than the fact that this is a very old roster, the oldest in the NFL, and it got older in the last 2 days with the addition of Andy Lee and Alex Boone. About the Alex Boone things, what do you see his role being? That's because I'm not sure yet what it meant. My initial take was, oh, wait, does this mean Mike Iupati's triceps injury is actually serious? We'll find out. Is it that they're not happy with Bame? Or maybe they just felt because they have no veterans on their bench behind them that they needed one. And maybe that's the case.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. I just think that you look at the depth that we just talked about and they literally have no veterans. I mean, it's just a walking group of undrafted free agents and a rookie. So I think you get a vet and I think you get a guy that can back up both guard positions. The biggest thing here is you do start to get an inkling, a wonderment of this Iupati triceps injury. But you kind of hit on it. Boone's a right guard by trade. They asked their left guard, you know, Iupati to pull a lot. Can he do that? I'm not saying he can't. I'm just asking the question if he can do that, if that's something he's able to do. But I think it comes down to what we talked about a little earlier. You have the basically you want a red shirt Will Holden without having to put him on the practice squad. Then you have a young John Wetzel, a young Ulrich John, and a young Daniel Munier. You needed a veteran on this team. You needed a veteran that can be a backup. You know, maybe he swings to the tackle position, you know, right tackle position if need be. So, all of a sudden now Valdir can move to left tackle. You've got just a plethora of different things you can do with the signing of Alex Boone. It gives you a little more positional flexibility and it gives you a veteran.
All right, that'll wrap up the talk of the roster. So coming up next on Rise Up Seaway, we're going to talk about our season preview, looking ahead to the 2017 season. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red. We're getting ready. It's time for the season preview. So we're now here at the 2017 season. Week one is on Sunday. They're starting on the road. So let's talk about that. So as we look at the season coming up, the Cardinals have addressed a lot of things. Special teams is a big problem. The punting, the kicking, they've shored that up with some very, very established veterans. That looks like the return game is kind of taken care of with Kerwin Williams and then TJ Logan when he's healthy. They've given him the rest that he needs. And then you go to the offensive line. They return a lot of guys, people around. But the questions, what are the questions that you have entering the season? What are the biggest two or three questions that you have for them?
I think the first question is, what does the offense look like? Are we going to see a closer semblance to the end of last year where Carson Palmer was doing more 3 and 5 step drops and getting rid of the ball? Or, you know, does Bruce Arians go back to the cookie jar and be Bruce Arians? You know, we wouldn't knock him if he did, because that's what makes him Bruce Arians. But still, like, they had a lot of success, and Palmer looked really good coming back last year with that offense. I think, you know, with a healthy DJ, and especially early, you could probably get away with doing a more, you know, quick passing offense type thing, taking the ball out of Palmer's hands a little. Maybe you don't have the yak machines that you'd want for that offense, but you do have some guys in Fitzgerald and Jerome Brown who can make catches within, you know, within that short and intermediate route range. And then you have two burners that can take the top off. Obviously you have DJ coming out of the backfield, and then you have big target tight ends in Jermaine Gresham, a hopefully healthy Troy Nicholas, and then hopefully healthy Ifeanyi Uma. So I think the offense is going to be the biggest question to me. Who are they as an offense? Does he go back to Bruce Arians, or does he adapt like he did and really take the pressure off the offensive line? Because I think that's where, for me, you know, all the questions really stem. Obviously, you got your tackles are both playing new positions. Your most veteran interior offensive lineman is being held together by duct tape at this point, it sounds like. And then you've got some, you know, short arm guys right in the middle that are going to be taking on some of the best interior pass rushers in the NFL this year, especially within the division at this point. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And then I think the other question I have coming into this year is, how fast does the defense gel? I don't have a question of how good they can be. I have a question of how fast they can get there. I still think that they're a, you know, top, I don't know, probably 12 at worst, but I think they can get back into the top 10 scoring defenses in the NFL. Don't talk to me about yards. I really don't care about yards at all. All I care about is scoring defense. If you're 31st in yards given up and first in points, I'll take that all day, every day. So
that would be really odd to do, but yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's all that matters to me. If they can get back into the top 10 scoring defense, and I think they have the talent to, it's just how fast does it mesh? How fast do these rookies integrate, and you know, what does Dansby have left? I think there's a lot of singular questions, but the best way to ask it is just with the, you know, can this defense get back to being, how fast can this defense get back to being great?
And for me, it's, you know, addressing the question you have, whether what the Cardinals do offensively, I think that depends on their receiver play. Because really, the bugaboo last year was the fact that John Brown wasn't healthy, Michael Floyd was ineffective, and J.J. Nelson was injured for the first half of the season. And so they kind of had to go with – they had to kind of adjust. If they get good receiver play, then I think it's back to the Bruce Arians special. For me, the question, the burning question offensively is about – protection on the offensive line, aside from the receiver play. But will Carson Palmer be under duress constantly like he was at the first part of last season, or will it look the way it did in the last half of last season, and they were, you know, piecemealing their offensive line, but suddenly things were working, and it had to do in part because of the changes in the offense. But that kind of it always comes down to Carson Palmer, and how good Carson Palmer is ultimately will be determined by how protected he is. So that's my number one question. The number two would be basically is special teams fixed? It should be, because if everything else stays the same, if the offense, even if it doesn't improve over last year, and the defense, even if it doesn't improve over last year, so if we got a repeat of just last year's offense and last year's defense, if special teams is good, they win 10 games and they're in the playoffs. So did things turn around? It looks like it with the new punter, with the new kicker. You've got a new returner. You've got a few players that are now featured in the core special teams. You know, looking at that, if that is done, can the Cardinals on offense and defense at least, you know, hold serve in terms of that? Because then that sort of makes up for the mistakes they had. And you know, do they make stupid mistakes? And then for me, defensively, it comes down to Justin Bethel and Tyrann Mathieu. Really, it does for me. Justin Bethel and Tyrann Mathieu. Can Justin Bethel be at least what Marcus Cooper was? Can he quiet the doubters? Because even though he's been really good pretty much since the spring, there isn't anything that there is no Cardinals fan that is comfortable with in there. There really isn't. So can he be starting caliber and consistent? And then is Tyrann Mathieu going to be Tyrann Mathieu? Because he started to look like it. And a healthy Tyrann Mathieu, a playmaking Tyrann Mathieu, changes the defense and covers up a lot of issues they might have elsewhere, whether that's Hassan Reddick having to play early on or the defensive line being average. Because they're going to lose some stats from what Calais Campbell had. It's just a matter of do they improve in other areas.
Yeah, I think you're right, too. You want to see, you know, what does Buda Baker have in case Mathieu is not himself? What does Reddick bring to the team? I know a lot of people were puzzled by Cappy not making the roster and then it seemingly not even getting offered a spot on the practice squad. But they've got plans for Hassan Reddick to be an outside rusher at times. So, I mean, I know we talked about earlier that they take the best players, but do you really want to stunt the growth of your 13th overall pick because of a guy that's going to be your fourth pass rusher off the bench? I mean, as good as Cappy was, that's what he was going to be this year at max. So it's not like it mattered. I think those are two big things. And then clearly we don't want to begin the discussion quite yet, but we're getting to the point where how much of a bugaboo is the health of Kamdiche, right? Like I know last year I think it was the first three or four games, he finally was himself again. And then, you know, it was more ineffectiveness and inability to grasp the defensive concepts. It sounded like maybe even a little immaturity that kept him sidelined. But now it's something different. And that's what the question is. Can he be the guy that is the interior presence for the Cardinals as a pass rusher? You know, I, in my bold predictions today on Revenge of the Birds, I talked about that and I said, I think he can get 6+ sacks this year. Obviously, that all comes down to, does he play? I mean, and not is he good enough to play, but is he on the field? There's already a question whether he's on the field week one. If he doesn't play week one, we go into week two with the same question. Is he going to be healthy? I don't know about you, but I would really like to be out of that question this Sunday. Like, I don't want to have to be worrying whether Kamdiche is going to be available every week.
Right. And you know, after having the lingering ankle injury last year, we don't want to see this being a regular thing. The players who need to step up. I'm looking at one offense, John Brown. They desperately need an effective John Brown. Doesn't have to be a 1,200-yard season John Brown, though that'd be fantastic. But it doesn't need to be a 750-yard John Brown. It needs to be a, you know, 15, like a, a 15-yard catch average John Brown who makes big plays from time to time. That, for me, on both sides of the ball.
I think Brown's a good one. For me, the main guy on offense that they need to step up is going to be DJ Humphreys. They have to get the production out of Humphreys that they got from 2014 and 2015 Jared Valdir. They don't need Humphreys to be Tyron Smith. They don't need Humphreys to be Trent Williams. They need him to be, you know, that top 12 left tackle that Valdir was in 14 and 15. If that happens, they're in a good spot. You know, if he's 13 or 14, he'll be fine. But you know, if he's a bottom of the barrel left tackle, man, that's not going to be, that's not what you want from him as a player. And so, all of a sudden there's going to be some problems. And I think that's going to change the overall offensive flow even more than wanting to see quick passing. I think it's going to necessitate a quick passing game, and it's all going to you know, kill any chances of, you know, a deep threat type of offense.
Okay. Let's talk season. Let's talk the schedule. Time ago, we did our initial win-loss prediction. As you're looking at the schedule, without just eyeballing it, I see the Cardinals as a 10 to 12 win team that will be in contention for the division. If I had to make a prediction, I'm going to say wild card. That's just my prediction. Based on the Seahawks track record, I can't in good faith just predict the Cardinals are going to be better than the Seahawks, because the Seahawks managed to do it every single year. And I will honestly say that with how things are going with the Cardinals right now, I am very, very bullish, very excited about this season as to what it can be. So I'm trying to grip my inner Homer, because I am positive natured and Homerish at the core, to say this is at least a 10-win team that can win as many as 12 or 13, but it'll probably somewhere 10 to 12, maybe the division, probably the wild card.
And see, I am kind of like you in the sense that I usually give a spectrum for all teams. And I think all teams play in a spectrum of four games. And what I mean by that is, I think the Cardinals are 9-17. I think they can easily be an 11-5 team. And I think they can easily be a 7-9 team again. I think they're a better than five, you know, they're a better than average team, but I do have questions, and the schedule didn't do them any favors this year. And so that's, you know, that's where my questions come in, is can they get out to a hot start with this, you know, tough schedule that they have? What are they able to do in the middle of the schedule when they get a bit of a, you know, an odd type of run where they get, you know, they get the Seahawks and Texans in back-to-back games, even though that, excuse me, that Texans game's, you know, 10 days after the Seahawks game. They have to, and I should have included this, they come off the bye and they get the 49ers on, and then they have a short week to the Seahawks, and then they go to the Texans. That's going to be a big three-game stretch for them. And can they, you know, make hay during that? That's kind of be a big point for them this year. But when you look at it overall, like I said, this is a team that should win 9 games. And if they won 11, we wouldn't be shocked by that. But we saw it last year. Games hinge on a lot of odd things. And we're talking about 3 kicks that decided the season for the Cardinals, from being, you know, a 10-win team to the 7-8-1 team that they were. So when I talk about that, did I see the Cardinals as an 8-8 team? Just take away the tie last year. Did I see the Cardinals as an 8-8 team? No, I think I had them at 12 wins. So I was over on how good they could be, you know, talking about 12 wins at worst, 10 wins. Like, maybe that was a little too optimistic, and obviously hindsight's 2020. But when you look at it this year, 9-7, I think it's and kind of to echo you, they're going to be playing for that wild card berth. They're going to have a lot of matchups against wild card teams. I mean, they get the Giants at home. They get the Skins on the road. You know, those are going to be, and they get the Eagles in Philadelphia, but they get them in October as opposed to
the Bucks.
Yeah, November or December. The Bucks are going to be a team that are going to be contending for a playoff spot. I mean, the only
Tennessee and the AFC too.
Right. And so the only kind of layups they have, and they're never layups because it's divisional, are those 49er games and the Rams games. And to an extent, that Colts game if Andrew Luck's not back, because that's a garbage team without Andrew Luck. And if they lose that game, I don't know what to think at that point. Like, if they lose to Andrew Luck, that's one thing. But if you lose to Scott Tolzien-led Colts team, maybe just –
or Jacoby Brissett. Maybe it's Jacoby Brissett.
Yeah, maybe it's Jacoby by that time. But, yeah, it might be – if it is Scott Tolzien, it's definitely pack it in time at that point. Like, I don't know. Even after two games, I don't know if there's recovery available for that.
So if you look at – for me, when I look at the schedule, I always look in kind of some bricks. The first thing I look is at the division. I think for what the Cardinals hope to do, they cannot go worse than 4-2. And that's, you know, that means they're gonna lose. Ideally, what that means, they split the Seahawks, they split one of the other teams and sweep the other. So, but as a minimum, if we're talking they want to win the division, they gotta go 4-2. Minimum. 3-3, you can get a wild card berth, but 4-2 is kind of so I'm gonna go with that. I think they're going to split Seattle. I think they're going to sweep one of the two other teams, and then the other team, one of the other, either the Rams or the 49ers, will sneak in a win somewhere. So you get four wins like that. If I'm going to look at these two, the opening 2 weeks, while my heart wants to say they're going to open 3-0, heck, they're going to open 4-0. I see a very easily there to be a split. If I'm being reasonable, they split the two games. So that's a 5-3. I think they beat the Cowboys, 6-3. I think at Philly, that's one of those games where I think it might be a loss, 6-4. The Bucks, I think, is a win. It's a 7-4. At the Texans, that's a tough one.
The Texans game really hinges on what they've got at quarterback at that point. If they're rolling with Tom Savage still, I'm assuming they're having a good season. If they're just shifting to Deshaun Watson, then that's in the Cardinals' favor. I mean, even if Watson gets the start, you know, in early November, and you and I don't know the Texans schedule offhand, so we're not going to pretend to, but, you know, if he gets the start in early November and he's game three, you still like the Cardinals' chances. But if, you know, if they go to Watson early and they're rolling, or they have Savage in there and they're rolling, then it's a whole different story.
So if I have to make an early prediction, I think that might be a loss. We've got four wins in the division, one more. So that's, they've got seven wins there.
I mean, if they lose to the Jaguars, again, just pack up the season.
That's eight. Yeah, that's an eight wins. I think they beat the Titans at home. That's going to be if Marcus Mariota's healthy, that's going to be a really fun game. And then that's nine wins. And then splitting the Redskins and Giants gets them to 10. As I'm looking kind of that series there, I see them going 2-2. Against the NFC, so they go 4-2 against their own division, 2-2 in the NFC East. Look, I guess I have them going maybe 3-1, maybe 2-2 in the
AFC
in
South.
The AFC South, and then splitting. Either going 2-0 or 1-1 on their two, basically their second place, or their third place. No, it's their second place schedule where they play the Lions and play the Bucks. And so I have them just as a modest 10-6. I think that's easily could be 12 wins as well. And the 12 wins, they should win the division. They should.
Well, and it depends if they, you know, if they go 3-3 in the division, and you know, that will likely play to the Seahawks' advantage. So it just depends on that. You know, I like I said, I got them at 9 right now. I think they win the first two. I think they drop the game to the Cowboys. Starting 3-0 is just really hard. And then I think they beat the Niners. I think they lose to the Eagles, beat the Bucks, beat the Rams, beat the Niners again, and then I think they get in a little funk and they lose to Seattle at home. For whatever reason, they struggle with Seattle at home and play better at the Clink. I don't get what that's about. You know, beat the Jags and Rams. So I, you know, do they get swept this year by the Seahawks? Man, I really hope not. Right, like, but I'm kind of with you. I feel like they're a 4-2 team in the division, and that's what makes it hard. And honestly, those games in December are really hard to call right now. Outside of the Rams at home, the Titans, the Skins, even the Giants, because you know if you're talking about that, that's a game right now. Like if you ask me what Cardinals game could get flexed, that's the game I'm probably picking right now. Because I think the Giants Cardinals could be a massive NFC wild card matchup on Christmas Eve. You know, that's going to end up being a game where, you know, you have a team that's maybe 8-6 in the Cardinals and a 9-5 team in the Giants. And that, you know, that's going to play out really enjoyably. So, And those games are hard to predict, especially, you know, as you talk about losing players. What do the Giants do as they go along? So it'll be interesting to watch.
And coming up next on Rice and Fever, we're going to talk about the game coming up against the Lions. So we're going to come back for one final segment. We're going to look at the Lions, the matchup there, kind of what to look forward to for that. So that's coming up for our last part of Rice and Fever. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red to talk about week one against the Detroit Lions, Ford Field, September 10th, 10 a.m. start, Arizona time. And that's, you know, here's the thing about with the Lions. As strong as they can be, because they have talent on defense, obviously with Matthew Stafford, they have weapons on offense. But the Cardinals have won won 7 straight games against the Lions. They just don't lose to them. and so you look at this game. Obviously, one thing plays the Cardinals' advantage, and that is no Taylor Decker, which means Marcus Golden, Chandler Jones, have fun. How much do you think that affects this game?
Well, here's a little tidbit. One of the writers at Revenge of the Birds is doing this kind of every week for the opposition. If there's not a great deal of information on the opposition, he'll look at the Cardinals. But there's a great deal of information on Matthew Stafford versus the Arizona Cardinals. So since he was drafted in 2009, he's played the Cardinals 4 times. He's 0-4 in those games. And to be completely honest, he's pretty abysmal. You look at
it. He lost to Ryan Lindley.
Right. He's only thrown 3 touchdowns. He's thrown 7 interceptions in those 4 games, including a 3 interception game in 2012 in the Ken Wisenhunt era and 3 interceptions in 2015. He's only had 1 passer rating over 65 against the Arizona Cardinals in his career, and that was in 2013 when he had a passer rating of 108. By far his best game as a Cardinal, or against the Cardinals, excuse me. And when you look at it, when it's all said and done, taking Taylor Decker out, we talked to some Lions people about this. We'll be talking about it on Revenge of the Birds later. They don't really have a number one offensive weapon. They have a bunch of really nice weapons. They're kind of built like the Patriots, sans Gronkowski. And let's be completely honest, as good as Matthew Stafford is, he's not Tom Brady. They have a bunch of guys who can do a lot of good things, but they're not necessarily big play guys. They have Golden Tate's very good wide receiver. Marvin Jones is a nice wide receiver. Amir Abdullah is a nice running back when he's healthy, which is, you know, rare. So when you look at it,
really talented,
right? Theoretic, really talented, but kind of a Andre Ellington type back. Not necessarily a guy that's going to grind out a lot of yardage. Eric Ebron is a anomaly at tight end, but he's also very rarely productive. So when you look at it, they just have a ton of talent on that offense, and they're just never great offensively. So is that Stafford, or is that him not having Calvin Johnson anymore, and they never really have recovered since then? I think it's that, you know, the latter, and that they've drafted a ton on the offensive line, and those guys aren't really even with the team anymore. Larry Wofford signed elsewhere. Lakin Tomlinson, their first round pick from 2 years ago, they traded away. Two guards that they invested heavily in are gone. Obviously, you talked about Taylor Decker. He was a first round pick. So they've invested on their offensive line almost as much, if not more, than the Cardinals have. And they've had maybe even less success than the Cardinals have. And that's tough. Defensively, if Ezekiel Ansah is healthy, he's a very nice player. However, he hasn't done anything. I mean, he's basically been Deion Buchanan at this point. Like, he hasn't done anything during training camp in the preseason. He's been on the pup. They just took him off. I don't know if you can expect a lot out of him. And he is realistically their only pass rush generator on their defense. If you ask any Lions fan what the biggest flaw in their defense is, they're going to tell you it's their pass rush. And so with Ansa being a question mark, it's an even bigger boon for the Cardinals. When you look at this game from, you know, just a broad spectrum standpoint, the Cardinals should be a more talented team. They just should be. They should win this game. They just should. They're more talented on offense versus, you know, a Lions defense, and they have the weapons to match up with the Lions offense. You never know, especially the first game of the season, especially on the road, especially an early start. That's just all of those things. All those things are always a recipe for, I don't really know what's going to happen. But since, you know, we get paid to make proclamations, I'm going to say the Cardinals win this one 31-24 and look pretty good doing it.
And for me, I like that. I think it'll be a little bit less close. I don't think it'll be quite within a touchdown. I'd say a 31-17.
I'm with you on that. I think they do get a cheapy late to kind of make it closer than it is. But I don't think it's going to be like, oh, the Cardinals score a touchdown with, you know, minutes to go. So,
you know, looking up and down this roster for the Lions, you're like, oh, I mean, they've got Greg Robinson on their offensive line. So that tells you the sort of problems they are having. I mean, you got a TJ Lang at guard. They've got good running backs. They've got nice running backs in Amir Abdullah and Theo Riddick. They've got, you know, with Golden Tate and Marvin Jones, you already mentioned. Kenny Golladay is a guy that kind of turned some heads in training camp.
I think he's still a year away. I like Golladay a lot. I just think he's still a year away.
I mean, if Haloti-Ngata is healthy, that is a handful in the middle of the – that's really a handful in the middle of the offensive line there, right at their point of attack. But, yeah, you look at the guys that they have on the edge, and you're like, no, none of that's really impressive, and their linebacking core isn't outstanding. And you've got a Jared Davis that they just drafted. He could be a tackling machine, but that's a game the Cardinals should win. But the question is just, do they start well? Because we know with these early East Coast games, really things go haywire if they don't start okay. If they face adversity early on the East Coast, then they're not going to do as well. That's just their MO. The Cardinals do really well playing from ahead and then playing from behind late if they were ahead early in the game. But if the Cardinals have always been, and under Bruce Arians, they respond to adversity if they started well. If they start poorly, they get shaky. And, you know, we've seen it time and time again. I don't know if that's a Arians thing, if that's a Carson Palmer thing, but the importance of playing well early, keeping things even, getting ahead, but not to get down a score or two, because then things fall apart.
Yeah, and like I said, that's what makes it even harder is it's game one, right? So we can really guess all we want about who the Cardinals are this year and what they're going to be, but we're really not going to know until tomorrow. Or not tomorrow, but Sunday. And we're right. Really not going to know what they are as a cohesive unit until Sunday. Because let's be honest, what they were last year, we're hoping is not indicative of what they are. And so, you know, we're still waiting to see who they are because we're hoping they're not like last year. We know that they're not 2015 Arizona. That ship has kind of sailed. But are they still a very talented team that can win a lot of games? And you and I both think so. Maybe, you know, against the facts in our face. But I think overall, you still have to like what they've built and who they are as a team.
And I'll tell you, in terms of, you know, I do my picks against the spread normally. You know, I'm not a better myself, I'm not a gambler, I don't do that, but I make my picks. One of the things, especially in week one, that scares me is I almost always pick the home, a team's home opener for the home team, because they come out jacked up with a fired up crowd. And so even if it's a team, say, like the Cleveland Browns, if it's their home opener, I'm not picking them to win, but I'm probably picking them to cover because they're going to be fired up. Right now, I think the Cardinals are like a 1.5-point favorite. So that's really close. But the handicapper in me says take the Lions because it's their home opener.
And I think that's completely 100% fair. I don't think that's a bad thing at all. I mean, I know you're going to get called, you know, not a homer, but I think, again, we're talking about game one. We just don't know. And to act certain at this point that the Cardinals are more than a, you know, a playoff contender, to act like they're, you know, who we thought they were coming from last year, I think is unfair to them and putting even if they would want those expectations, is putting too much on the team as a whole expectation wise.
And so I'm going to amend this. So I'm going to go this route. It's going to be a 31-30 Cardinals win on a Phil Dawson field goal late in the game. But that'll set the tone for the season. That'll be a great tone setter because of what that Chandler Catanzaro miss in week one did for kind of sent the Cardinals kind of in a tailspin early in terms of confidence. You know, thinking about, you know, the handicapping side of things, I'm going to take the Cardinals with a 31-30 thrilling win. They win, the Lions cover, and Phil Dawson's worth will be proven early.
And I like that. I think that's a good. I think that's a good pick.
That'll be fun. Just hopefully it actually doesn't. I'd much rather 31-17. Exactly. That I like that idea. But yeah, I think that's, you know, key matchups. Do you see looking at? I think what we need to see, ideally, Deion Buchanan is playing. So let's look for him against, you know, Ameer Abdul and Theo Riddick. And then see that secondary matchup and defensively with Justin Bethel against Marvin Jones, because we know that Patrick Peterson will take care of Golden Tate. But it's that secondary matchup that I've always want to pay attention to, because that's where the damage could happen. Those are the ones I want to watch for in terms of defending the Detroit offense and the pass rush. Can Chandler Jones and Marcus Golden take advantage of the tackle situation in Detroit? And for me, those are the most important matchups. I'm not even looking at the Cardinals' side of the ball in terms of offense, because I think if the defense takes care of that, if they can win those matchups, I think it takes care of everything else.
I agree with you. And like I said earlier, they don't have the horse. I shouldn't say that. They shouldn't have the horses up front on defense to match what the Cardinals can do offensively. They just shouldn't. It may be the downfall of this team this year, but, you know, speaking of the Lions, but for the Cardinals, it's exactly what you want to see, and what you expect is them to take advantage and really put together a nice game. And that's why I think they score 31. I think they have a really, you know, I think it's not really close in the first three quarters, and it tightens up a little bit in the fourth. But 31-24, I think the Cardinals kind of run away with it and then hold on at the end.
Gets, you know, that's a very, very Cardinals way to predict that. So that'll wrap up episode 165 of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We've talked roster, we've talked season preview, we've talked about the matchup against the Detroit Lions in week one. You can find our podcast pretty much everywhere you can. You can find it on Blog Talk Radio. It's featured on each one of our sites at cardswire.com and also at revengeofthebirds.com, also at Audio Boom, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher Radio, and iTunes. You can find us on Facebook, Rise Up Sea Red, and also on Twitter, Rise Up Sea Red. On behalf of both of us, that's Seth Cox, I'm Jess Root. Go Cardinals as we enter week one, and rise up, Sea Red.